intimate, passionate love like you've never known it before. Find out what intimate, passionate love is and how you can create it. Anya Shekina, at times accompanied by her husband, Dr. Stephen Vogue, and Anya's amazing guests share their secrets to creating lasting, intimate, passionate love. Join in to find out how you can create your intimate, passionate love.
Welcome, fellow travelers on the path to intimate, passionate love. I'm Anya Shekina, and today I have a very special guest and a dear friend. Her name is Tess Kempner, and Tess is a person that questions everything, everything in the world of social relationships, and she is into higher consciousness, which is how we connect through our mutual interest in higher consciousness. But Tess took it one step further. She developed an experimental alternative community called the Universal Temple of Higher Consciousness, an unconditional love and world peace incubator. And that it was.
Thank you.
And she has been questioning social beliefs and beliefs about relationships and looking for new concepts that will better fit the higher consciousness that she seeks and that we are both seeking. And she's looking for that in the realm of love, commitment, responsibility, loyalty, and devotion. And she has come up with a concept that most represents what she is talking about and thinking about, and that is the concept of sovereignty. And sovereignty is the subject matter, really. Above anything else, sovereignty is the subject matter of our radio show today. And with sovereignty, we're talking about being sovereign in terms of your own life, you ruling you. And so I'd like to also add that Tess has inspired many people, including me and my friends, to live a more free, authentic, and heart-centered life. And I think that it's gone both ways, so that feels really good. And
thank you.
Yeah, Tess, is there anything I have not said here that you feel that people might like to know, or that you would like people to know about you?
Wow, I think what you said was pretty far-reaching. So for the moment, I'm happy to go with that. I'm very honored to be reflected and validated in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you.
When I first asked Tess to do this radio show, it happened because, as you all know, I have been doing this work in terms of relationship on intimate, passionate love and an evolutionary relationship and looking at what evolutionary relationship is and very powerfully holding the concept that in order to have an evolutionary relationship, you need to have a balance between togetherness, security, bonding on the one hand, and freedom and autonomy on the other. And with the one, the togetherness and the love, comes security. And with the other, the freedom and the autonomy, comes risk and mystery, uncertainty. So knowing this and wanting, in fact, to talk about this on the radio show, in fact, that was my intention that the next radio show I did on my own would be on this subject matter, then when talking to Tess and her talking about sovereignty and what that meant to her, I went, yes, yes, that's another way of putting this, but I'm not sure if it's exactly the same. And so what I'm hoping to get out of this discussion is to find out what is the, how close is it or what are the differences? And if there are differences, what can we learn from those differences in the two perspectives? They could be the same. So I want to begin by asking you, Tess, to share what you mean when you talk about sovereignty and, give us the picture of sovereignty and why we should want to be sovereign?
Well, you know, I've heard it said that we're born alone and we die alone. And throughout our lives, no matter what relationship we're in, and I happen to believe that underneath the various titles that we can put on relationship, whether it is romantic partner or parent-child or teacher-student or grocery clerk and customer, it really makes no difference, that our true relationship in every single case is that we are all allies in one another's evolution. And, you know, and that everyone outside of ourselves is a mirror that is reflecting back to us our most magnificent aspects and our shadow, our aspects that we are uncomfortable with, that we need to continue to mold and morph until we become the actualized being that we came here to be. And so even when we're in relationship, we're always in relationship with ourselves. So while we're in conversation with another human being, at least a good portion of our focus of attention is in witness to ourselves and the conversation that we're having inside of ourselves, of how we're doing, of how the other person is doing, our mirror. And it's really our relationship with ourself that we're constantly evolving. And so it's our relationship with ourself. It's our relationship with our source, our inner being, whatever we want to call it. And Osho actually said that the hardest illusion for a human being to overcome is the illusion of romantic love, because we have all been brainwashed and hypnotized and indoctrinated to dream of that one perfect other who will sweep us off our feet and answer us on every level. And most of us, in our real-life relationships have found ourselves to be sorely disappointed when the person who in new relationship energy is so fabulous in the day-to-day relating, our issues and our vulnerabilities and our wounds and our shortcomings emerge, and the person is not meeting us on this level and that level, and there's all this frustration and disappointment. And I consider myself something of a relationship expert, as I was with my first husband for 12 and a half years and swore I would never get married again, and then fell in love with my second husband, who he and I actually just 2 weeks ago celebrated the 20th anniversary of our first date, and we were monogamous for 11 and a half years, and then without much clear intention found ourselves opening up our relationship to polyamory as a spiritual path of transcending the illusion of separation and seeing the beloved in all forms, ultimately. And so I was in simultaneous partnership with my husband and a lover that actually moved in with us, and the three of us cohabitated for about 6.5 years. And in the past, 2 months, my lover has gone on to what he normally does in the summertime, which is 4 months of traveling and summer festival circuit up in Northern California. So we're having an opportunity to take a break from one another. And my husband and I, in commemoration of our 20 years of committed partnership, have chosen to liberate one another and set each other free, and are presently not living under the same roof. And increasingly over the past few years, as I have been looking at the challenges of single relationship partnership and then multiple relationship partnership and all the agreements and negotiations and hand-holding and caretaking and processing and being present, I've come to the conclusion that being sovereign meaning being self-contained in my consciousness, in my sense of integrity, my sense of alignment with my purpose, my conscience, is really my business, and that ultimately having to negotiate with anyone about what I do with my time, with my energy, with my attention, with my heart, with my body, is really my business. And so where I'm at right now is feeling that the higher choice, and I feel like monogamy and polyamory ultimately are to lead us back to this so that we can really be world servers, is that I'm married to myself. I am married to the beloved within me, and I am whole and complete unto myself, and that romance is a partnership is sort of icing on the cake that is fleeting, and that we get to appreciate it and love it and enjoy it when it is available, and when the truth of our energy is calling us in another direction, that we not suffer about it and we not feel ashamed or guilty that we're not living into some cultural hypnosis around the perfect way to exist in life, and that we trust and release one another to follow our hearts. So I think that you know, there's something beautiful about coming together to co-create, but where relationship has fallen short for me is when I have felt that I have compromised my own impulses in order to accommodate the preferences and insecurities, perhaps, of somebody that I'm in a relationship with. And then I start to feel like I'm suffering and I'm resentful because I'm not being a fully expressed person. And I think that ultimately having my own boundaries of what is my truth and what isn't, and not having to explain, apologize, negotiate, or answer is where I want to go.
Okay, so I think that some people might find your position a little scary and perhaps
no doubt.
Yeah, because you know, when you talk about having to compromise and accommodate, I think many people, and perhaps even most people, can resonate to that and what it does to you, that it, you do become less. I mean, that's, you know, really much what I'm sharing with people, that, you know, you want to live your, and I'm going to say sort of what I'm going to say is very similar to what you said, but somehow it doesn't lead to quite the same extreme direction. And it's that you want to live in a way whereby you're true to who you are, your nature, and your values, and how you want to live your life. And so you don't want to have to compromise that in a relationship because your partner wants you to be different or wants you to live differently or to do this or that differently. On the other hand, it may be, and this is, it's like, where do you get the balance here? And there is a balance here. It may be that your partner wants you to change, to be different, because you will be more evolved in doing so. It depends on where your partner's coming from. If they want you to be different so that they get to be more comfortable, they get to win, it's more convenient for them, then you have to, you know, very much weigh that against you being true to you, which makes you attractive when you're true to you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I think being true to you is the key. It's the key thing. And yet, sometimes who you are is less than who you could be, because we all have, as a result of our childhood upbringings and psychological, emotional traumas that happen to us, parts of us that become crippled and distorted. Perhaps we begin to deny a part of ourselves that's essential to being an evolved person. Perhaps we don't get to express our feelings, or we only get to express anger and not much else. Perhaps we have not enough control, and we just can't calm ourselves down and get completely biochemistry-wise in a mess when we move into an emotional upset. Perhaps we don't have enough self-confidence and can't see our inner beauty and can't validate ourselves. Maybe we can't take our personal power. Maybe we're frightened and we can't respect the needs and desires of others. All of this will upset our partner, and they will want us to shift. I think what it comes down to is if we agree that we should change, that we should operate somewhat differently because we get the point, then it's good. It can be good to compromise and accommodate. But if we're doing it just because we want our partner to be happy so they won't be stressed and so that we won't have to deal with the stress of their anxiety, and therefore we snip a bit off of ourselves here and there and stop living this way or that way, then that's not going to work. We're not going to feel good about ourselves. And so it's like walking a tightrope. It's a subtle game of balance.
Yeah. Well, we come forward with our family of origin issues. We bring all kinds of baggage into our relationship, some of which we're aware of, most of which is unconscious, and then we start projecting our issues onto our partners. And oftentimes we're codependent, and we fall into what we describe as a mutual hypnosis in relationship, and we're like working out our karma with our partners. And if our partners don't have the presence of mind to recognize what's going on, then they're constantly defending themselves against our issues that we're bringing out. And one of the reasons that either to be an open relationship or to maintain that sense of sovereignty is because we're myopic, and we need more than one reflection to help us identify our issues and our wounds in order to grow and overcome them. If we're holding on to our relationships and we're compromising ourselves because we have abandonment issues, and we have a fear of being left, then we're not standing in our power, and we become less and less attractive to our partners the more we accommodate, because we're no longer that free and beautiful person that they fell in love with.
Yeah. So I'd like to say, Tess, what the point you're bringing up here is a very relevant point, that in order to be able to attempt to be sovereign, in order to have an appetite for it at all, there's certain things that you have to have achieved within yourself for it to be possible. Though if you've achieved enough of them, it might help develop them further. And the things that I'm talking about is, you have to love and validate yourself, because if you don't, you're dependent on your partner to constantly be doing this for you, to constantly be affirming you and being in sync with you so that you can feel A, safe, and two, good about yourself, get that reflection from them. And, Oh, I'm not sure where I'm leading to with that point. In fact, you've got to be able to do that. Otherwise, you're going to be afraid. You're going to be afraid that you're going to lose. You're going to be afraid to let go. You're going to be afraid you're going to be run by your fear if you don't deal with that.
Right.
Yeah. And there are a number of qualities that you have to be able to pull it off.
And then we're not in love anymore. Then we're in fear. Then it's the whole, kind of neurotic distortion, and we're clinging to one another, and how can there be any kind of, joy and satisfaction in that space? That's why it's important to know oneself. If I had my life to do over again, I think I would have remained single a lot longer until I felt that I was a fully actualized individual in my own right, and I knew what my interests were, and I knew what my preferences were, and I knew what my thresholds were, and then fit relationship into those, you know, available time slots rather than mold my life around relationship and give up a little here and give up a little there, and my partner gave up a little here and a little there, and before we knew it, we're, you know, not who we were intended to be, and neither of us, you know, were particularly happy, and so now, at this stage in our lives, like the most loving thing that we can do is release one another to find ourselves, you know, and even though it's scary, it's totally scary to be alone, especially in a culture that upholds partnership as the ideal. You know, it's so interesting to me because I have so many single friends that are desperate for partnership and, you know, so afraid that they're going to be alone for the rest of their lives. And for me, where I'm at right now is like I have to be alone, partly because I don't want to live my life in that same fear of, oh, my God, I'm one of the lucky ones and I have a partner, so I better cling to that partner because what will happen one day in my old age when they die, if they die before me, and then suddenly I have to figure it out when I'm 70 or 80, you know what I mean? And so I think that having that confidence, having that sense of fulfillment, that it's my responsibility to make myself happy, because ultimately nobody can make us happy if we're inherently unhappy within ourselves. If we're inherently insecure, we have self-esteem issues or whatever it may be. I'm remembering right now, Anya, that when we first spoke to set up this interview, I shared a story with you that you asked me to repeat, so I'm glad it's coming back to me right now. And that is that a couple of years ago, I was visiting my brother and his wife, and they live very, very independent lives from one another. They've been married probably 40 years or so, and they have 3 grown kids and 9 grandchildren. My sister-in-law was telling me how early in her marriage to my brother, he was a traveling salesman at that time, and she was home with taking care of 3 babies, and he had called her from the back of a limo somewhere on the other side of the country, and he was like, you know, guess where I am, Mindy? I'm in a limo with, I don't know, it was like the owner of some national basketball team or something, and she hung up on him. And she was really angry, and she called her grandmother, and she was crying, you know, that he's out in the world, and he's having so much fun, and she's stuck at home with her 3 kids and how unfair it is. And her grandmother was very wise and said to her, you cannot count on him to make you happy. You are responsible for your own happiness. So it's up to you to buy yourself a bottle of wine and make your own candlelit dinner just for you. And it completely changed her life. And frankly, when she told it to me, it changed mine too. Because I had been looking for my partners to make me happy and had been, you know, angry with them. And it really had nothing to do with them. It had to do with some, you know, unhealed part of me that didn't feel completely lovable. So whose responsibility is it for me? These people are just mirrors. If I'm not loving me, then they will never fill that hole.
Right, so that is the key, and it's a key to being happy alone or in a monogamous relationship or in a polyamorous relationship. It doesn't matter which it is. I think that that is a beautiful story. I'm so glad you remembered to tell it, because that work is what each of us, each man and each woman, you know, has to be able to do for themselves.
Right.
But it is not saying it. I, you are remarkable. You could hear it. You could just make the shift. It takes a lot to make the shift, because you really have to let go of your childhood programming, and you have to learn how to nurture yourself and how to source yourself and how to really actually move into a place of tantric presence with life, where you just can be in a place of just powerful, silent, connected appreciation or wonderful celebration, and know how to have wonderful friends and be daring. It's a whole work to get there. It's a self-actualization course. It's a personal transformation course. You've been on it for a long time, Tess, and you are a leader anyway, and so it's taking all that you've got to take this extremely brave step into, doing it. You're doing it. You have taken the step to sort of be true to yourself. You've done it in a beautifully conscious way. You and your husband are still best friends and in support of each other's lives. And
that's what love is. I mean, if you truly love someone in an unconditional, unselfish way, then you are their biggest cheerleader for their happiness and their fulfillment.
Right.
And it's more important. I mean, I would rather be apart from my husband and have him find his fulfillment than have him cling to me because I don't want to be alone or because I'm going to miss him. It's not fair.
Or because he doesn't want to be alone.
What's that?
Or because he doesn't want to be alone.
Or because he doesn't want to be alone. And so the greatest act of love that we can demonstrate to one another is, I love you so much that your happiness is more important to me than keeping you with me. You know, and I really believe that we're here to actualize. We're here to wake up. I mean, life is hard. It's challenging. And you know, if one believes in reincarnation and evolution and all this, I don't necessarily want to come back here, you know. And so I'm intent on learning every lesson that I can, as long as there's breath in my body, so I don't have to come back to go through it again. I mean, I came into this world. I'm the daughter of two Holocaust survivors. My mother is 90 years old right now, and, you know, in those years when the war ended, it was not socially acceptable to go to therapy. They didn't know about having some kind of decompression orientation before they integrated people back into society. All they did was hurry up and pick a partner and try to create a semblance of normalcy as much as they could, and so my mother has so many unhealed wounds, and I was born into a desperately sad household. And so it was like, for my whole life, there's got to be something better than this. This cannot be, you know, if one believes in God, this cannot be God's will that we be unhappy forever. And what does it look like to be happy? What does it feel like to be happy? Who's responsible for my happiness? It has to come from inside me. Only I know what makes me feel good. Really, people can guess. You know, I had this cartoon that I loved. This woman was telling her friend, what she wants in a partner, and her friend kept saying to her, "Well, did you tell Joe that? No. Well, did you tell Joe that? No. Did you tell Joe that? No." And her final her comment was, "I want someone who's a better guesser." You know, and we would all like to be in relationship with a better guesser who could just magically do everything right for us all the time. But it's a lot of work and it's a lot of responsibility. And if all their focus of attention is on pleasing us and making us happy, then they get lost. And what about them? You know, and we have to be fine in relationship and not in relationship, because life is going to, you know, throw us curveballs and bring us changes all the time. And no matter, I mean, that's why, I mean, I have such an issue at this point with the hypnosis around matrimony, to make a till death do us part commitment to another human being is so, does, in my opinion, is doing violence to one's soul, because we're free. Our soul is free and is evolving and changing and growing and wanting to experience new things. And we lock it into this commitment that we now have to live into. And either we suffer trying to live into it, or we cheat because we don't want to hurt our partner, but we can't live into it. And there's nothing wrong with the people. There's something wrong. There's something inherently wrong with the commitment.
Yeah,
so
the
to
thing
me,
that's most wrong is the lying and the dishonesty.
Yeah, but it's unreasonable to put that kind of limitation on ourselves. How can we know today? We don't really have a crystal ball. How can we know today what we're going to want to do 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 30 years from now? And
well, you know,
it's,
sorry.
That's okay. I mean, if we, I wrote about this. If, how beautiful to make no commitment to another human being, but the love is so strong and there's so much mystery and there's so much fascination, endless, curiosity about the other human being that you find yourself day after day waking up and going, wow, I'm still here. Wow, you're still here. How awesome is that? With no commitment. With no commitment, just pure desire that we're following energy, not some kind of mentally opposed agenda that we're placing on ourselves, and now we feel guilty if we can't live into that because we gave our word and we all want to be our word. But what if we had no commitment, just I will love you, I will support your true wild nature, and you're going to support mine, and if we stay together, great, and if we don't, of course it must be great too. Because the universe is abundant and love is all around us, whether it's from this form or another form or the sunshine on our face, you know.
Well, you brought up so many points that I could have responded to, Tess, and, I sort of thinking I'd like to just go back to one that you made earlier on about that what we need to be able to be alone and not be afraid of being alone, and in our it's a difficult thing. I mean, because of the whole economic thing, there can be a lot of poverty associated with being alone. But I agree with you that you need to have that capacity to be alone, because it's through that capacity to be alone that you can stay freely.
You need to love your own company.
Right.
Ultimately, you need to get past all the self-loathing, all the fear, all the insecurity, all the social stigma, and absolutely be able to look at yourself in the mirror and love who you see. And that's it. And we have to do that work. Otherwise, we're always going to be dependent and we're always going to be in fear.
And we're always going to be either manipulating our partner in order to feel safer so that we can have the life we want because we can't give it to ourselves, or we're going to be giving up what we want and being manipulated by our partner. But
right.
I want to say that the whole concept of, doing your own thing and following your own path, and what we're talking about could be taken to be validating selfishness and insensitivity. But I would like to put it into a broader framework that when you determine what it is that you want, what you may want is for your partner's interests to be met. It's not necessarily so that you might always think that some desire you have, you would prefer yourself to be met than your partner's desire. I can think of a lot of situations that, that I would rather my partner's need be met on some level than my own, because my partner's need in that particular situation is more significant to his happiness than my need is significant to my happiness, and I get happiness out of his need being met. I mean, the psychologist David Schnarch put it that instead of it being my needs against your needs, it's my needs versus my desire for your needs to be met.
Which might be your need and might be your preference in that particular moment.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I also feel that if you want a good relationship, you're going to put energy into bonding with your partner too. You're going to be put energy into bonding with your partner, not by just sacrificing your needs, that's not a very good way, but by creating creating the opportunities, multiple opportunities for being very deep and connected and sensual and alive with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. To really develop fabulous communication, to learn ways of having tremendous pleasure together and being in deep presence and being very honest with each other, all of which will make your relationship more intimate and more lasting.
Yes,
and,
well, cultivating presence is imperative, as far as I'm concerned, that we are so in touch with ourselves and we're so sensitive to one another and we're so sensitive to the nuances of shifting energies in the environment. Because, I mean, if it's true that ultimately we are all one, then if I'm uncomfortable, then you're uncomfortable, even if you're not aware of it, or vice versa. And so if whichever one of us has the more presence of mind to speak to what it is that isn't feeling right, then ultimately whatever we choose to do to shift that is going to be in the highest and best interest of both of us, even if one of us can't see it right in the moment. You know what I'm saying? So what you said before, if you don't have a strong attachment to a particular thing and it's just as fine for you or maybe even more fine for you to make sure that your partner is accommodated in a particular situation, that's one thing. But if you are clear that you are compromising yourself in some way in order to accommodate your partner's preference, ultimately it's not in your partner's best interest for you to do that. It's going to backfire in some way, shape, or form. We can't be making concessions that we're going to resent.
I'm thinking while you talk about a friend, a mutual friend, who her husband was an introvert, didn't like to go out. She was an extrovert and very social woman and loved to go out. And after 15 years of marriage, she said, look, you know, where it's at, it's either divorce or I live my way and you live your way and we come together. And he chose that, and she proceeded for the next, whatever it is, 25, well, I'm sure she's been, you know, next 10, 15, or whatever it is, years, to go out with her friends, socialize, camp, do all sorts of things, Saturday night, Sunday night, midweek if she wanted to, and he chose to stay home. And they've still been together all that time, happy in their relationship because they can they are giving each other what they have to give with each other and taking for themselves what they don't have to give each other. So she's getting what she wants alone, what he can't give her, and he's getting what he wants alone, what she can't give him. And they both value what it is that they can give each other and join together. And I think that's the way. I think that's a fabulous role model. So, Tess, have you got any thoughts about these things I've been saying? Do you agree with me with regard to the them being a role model?
Yeah, I think that is an excellent example. That the point is that we unite where we unite. And I think what the issue that we're really discussing is that we create a problem, I will say that word, a problem for ourselves when we feel as though we have to define, put a label on what kind of a relationship we're in. Because the truth is, is that the relationship, all relationships are an entity unto themselves, and they're always in motion, and they're always in reconfiguration and renegotiation, and it's different for every partnership, for every dyad, for every couple, even triad or corporation or whatever it is. Everything is a living, unique entity unto itself, and we can make cross comparatives and talk about these various things. I can think of so many, you know, so-called traditional married couples whose lifestyle is unique unto themselves. Because I remember when I was a kid being really impressed with Phil Donahue and Marlo Thomas, who both had thriving careers. You know, he in the talk show business and she in her TV series. And they lived in two different states. And they took planes back and forth, and they only saw each other on the weekends. And, you know, as far as I know, they're probably still together. So that's a traditional married couple. So who knows what they do when they're apart from one another? Who knows what their agreements are about what they share? And who knows whether they're honest about what they're agreeing to, or, you know, don't kiss, don't tell, out of sight, out of mind, if what I don't know won't hurt me, kind of a thing. There's so many different models. There's so many different ways, and they're all subject to change. So maybe, for example, my husband and I and my lover and I, who, you know, 4 months of being apart with no agreements about what happens and doesn't happen, because neither one of us want to restrict one another in any way, shape, or form. We don't owe anything to one another, and that's a point, too. We don't owe anything to one another. That's what we have to wake up from, is this hypnosis. You know, I have this wonderful poem. I could go find it probably while I'm talking to you. It's called Comes the Dawn. You can Google search it, Comes the Dawn. And it says, you learn the subtle difference between holding a hand and chaining a soul. And you learn that kisses aren't contracts and presents aren't promises. And it goes on from there, but that's what I can remember. That, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, this is so far-reaching what we're talking about. And once you set foot on the path of freedom, there's no stepping back. It's like Thelma and Louise. You know, once you've broken out of the box and you start thinking for yourself and you don't just start following somebody else's road that was laid out in front of you from a different perspective and a different mindset and a different culture and everything, then, you know, all bets are off.
Yeah,
your heart's going to take you where it wants to take you, or you're going to die if you don't let it.
So I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm wanting to translate this into what it would mean to be in a sovereign relationship when you are in a relationship and you're not planning on leaving. And I mean, I'm hearing all that you're saying, but it's like, what do you have to do, and how are you? And I'd like to just begin with a few thoughts on that subject matter and then invite you in on it. Because I feel that in order to have a sovereign relationship, in order to be able to, you have to be able to give, not feel that you own your partner. That's one of the things that you're bringing out. And you have to think that your partner's interests and desires are as significant as your own. You have to be self-aware. You have to know who you are and know what you're doing and get what's going on with yourself in any given moment, understand the dynamics that are operating in you, how your past is influencing what's happening in the present in terms of your perceptions of the present and your reactions to the present. To be that self-aware, you have to be self-accepting, to accept yourself and love yourself as you are, with all your strengths and all your weaknesses. You have to be self-validating, which means that you are the source of your own affirmation. You are the source of of your self-respect, and that it comes through your own experiences of living and your own successes in life. I'm not talking about career successes, though it could be that, but I'm talking about, you know, your successes in evolving and dealing with difficult situations and taking risks and learning that you can handle things that you can't and facing your fears. Yeah, and you have to be able to comfort yourself, because if you can't comfort yourself when you're in stress, when you're in anxiety, then you're going to try and manipulate your partner to do what you want them to do and to be how you want them to be and to sacrifice their interests for you because you need to be soothed and you can't soothe yourself. So I feel that these are key things that have to take place for someone to be able to have a relationship that's in which they're sovereign.
I would love to go back and...
Say that again?
We must go back and transcribe those principles that you just channeled. I mean, I would say that right, everything you just said right there, I mean, it was so huge that it's the answer right there. Is that's the way it breaks down into those steps.
Yeah.
I couldn't even repeat them right now, but that's I'm feeling it, you know, very, very clearly. And, yeah, because you said something before, you know, about doing whatever you want to do or doing whatever they want to do as, you know, potentially selfish. And I think that it's far more selfish to demand that your partner sacrifice themselves for you. Far more selfish.
I agree, and you know, so I think a part of the key thing is that you view your partner's life as valuable independently of the surface that your partner's life does to your own life, and that it's only when you do view your their lives as so valuable that you're motivated to give them the freedom they need to fulfill themselves in ways that are both large and small. I mean, it may be the freedom to go out and take the time they need to do the things they love to do or that will help develop them further. It may be the freedom to make other connections outside of the relationship, whatever it is. That
you
give them the freedom to meet their higher needs.
And you know what my experience is, honestly and truly,
mm-hmm.
is that the more I bless my partner's freedom, the more they love me and appreciate me and value me and are loyal to me, I would say, energetically and emotionally, whether I see them ever again or I don't. It's like I know that the fact that I love them enough to not restrict them makes me, you know, a rare one in a billion, you know, being, honestly, you know, it's to me, it's really sacred, you know, it's really sacred to have that much love and that much trust and that much respect
right.
all the way around.
Right.
That, you know, and one of the things that
I have that experience too.
Yeah. It's like, wow, you're so amazing. You really do love me. You really want me to be happy. You really want me to have what makes my heart sing. Where is there another you? I will never meet another you that is so amazing like that. You know, and so you will always be in my life. And every time I see you, I will just treasure you more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that part of it too is that we not take our moments for granted. We cleave ourselves onto one another in this for death, till death do us part curse. I will say we place a curse on one another because as I consider myself a master word alchemist, you know, and I really do believe that we cast spells and we pass sentences that we have been given the power to create through, you know, being very intentional and precise about the words that we choose to speak. And we make this pronouncement in the face of our community and under the eyes of God, till death do us part, and now we've committed ourselves to a death sentence.
And yet, if we are if we evolve, if we self-actualize, if we support our partner in evolving and self-actualizing, and if we put as much attention, put a lot of attention into our togetherness, and enrich it, and make it filled with variety and spontaneity and aliveness, then we're going to want to stay together. And
maybe,
that's the other side
maybe.
Of it. Maybe.
Maybe.
Well,
because
that's been my experience.
We're eagles. We're eagles. Mm-hmm. And we've been in a nest. And we are comfortable in our nest. And we don't necessarily even know that we can fly. But somehow, one day, you know, we fall out of the nest. And before we hit the ground, our wings spread. And suddenly we discover we can soar. Maybe we'll come back. But don't you think we're going to want to experience what that feels like?
I think that everybody might have different ways of wanting to experience what that feels like. I mean, some people might choose the route of creativity. Some people might choose the route of sexual freedom. It's different things for different people. And because people...
Are they choosing it or is it choosing them? I mean, really,
well,
I mean, do we really... I mean, it's like we meet somebody and we're drawn to them. If love is this irresistible force, we can fight it and we can fight it, we can fight it. Or, you know, and so what's our lives going to be like at that point if we're fighting our natural impulse? And we may never have that impulse, yet we may have an impulse to take up skydiving and our partner's not interested in skydiving. You know what I mean? And we fall in love with skydiving and it becomes our passion and we give more and more and more of our hours to it. You know, and our partner, who's used to having all of our attention, is like, wait a minute, what happened? You're off doing this thing that has nothing to do with me. What's the difference?
Tess, I'm aware that time's more than up, so
okay.
I want to leave it as this is a conversation that is not complete.
Right.
And I think that you and I are going to do some work together and create programs in which this will be an exploration. Because it's a new thing, and it's like how far can you take this, and how far, and what are the different directions it can go in? Many people want a monogamous connection with their partner and are happy to have it, because the quality of the connection and the freedom that they give each other within a monogamous connection is so high, and they feel good. Now, maybe they would feel even better if they opened up, but, you know, this is part of the exploration.
Right, but what I'm saying is that these are just words. I mean, we're trying to it's like it's mercurial, and we're trying to go, okay, this is what my relationship is, and put a label on it. And the only reason we temporarily, and I underline temporarily, feel a need to do so is to protect ourselves out of a sense of fear or vulnerability of the unknown. That's it. That's the only thing that's there. And so we take baby steps and incremental, and we negotiate and we make agreements, and we have them for a while, and then we can take another step, you know, or take a giant leap or whatever we do. But ultimately, even I mean, relationship, it's like we put training wheels on our bicycle until we don't need them anymore. So partnership is like, yeah, we may stay together, we may, but whether we do or whether we don't, it's divine. It's irrelevant. It's really ultimately irrelevant. It's not about trying to force or ensure anything, because all of that for me feels like it's coming from a fear of an unwanted future. And if we're living our lives in fear of an unwanted future, we're really diminishing our present.
Well, thank you very much for sharing all that you'll have to share. I find it very exciting, Tess, and also that there's a lot of food for thought here. It's very deep. And I would love to end. Tess, one of the things I didn't mention about Tess is that she is a composer of music and a singer of music, and her music is really wonderful. And if you want to purchase it, you will have a chance to do that on the Intimate Passionate Love .com website, that is our website, and
we
want to end with a song of Tess's.
Where we will also be posting our upcoming workshop on exploring sovereignty, the leading edge, And I want to thank you very, very much for this beautiful, deep, and far-reaching conversation. And I'm looking forward to seeing which of the two songs you're going to be putting on.
Well, it was the first one you mentioned. Can you say the name?
Oh, it was Absolution. Is that the one you're going to do?
Absolution.
Okay. Absolution. So enjoy it. The other one is Finding My Own Way, and if you want to hear that, let Anya know, and maybe we'll find a way for that to happen too. So
yes.
God bless, and namaste. Thank you.
Namaste.
Preconceptions of this or that, or this or that, or writing on
You've been listening to Intimate Passionate Love with Anya Shekina. Anya Shekina is a doctor of psychology and an intimate passionate love coach. Together with Dr. Stephen Vogue, her husband of over 25 years, she is a tantra teacher, sexologist, and sexual health consultant. You can work with them as a team or with either one of them independently. Both are available for private phone and Skype video sessions anywhere in the world and for in-person sessions in San Diego, California. You can find them on their Intimate Passionate Love Facebook page, their intimatepassionatelove.com website, or at docvogue.com.